I wanted to talk to you about music for a time and place. And I always think about that summer that you had sitting in your hammock listening to music and how that coloured the appreciation you had of certain tunes that year. Because in a not exceptionally great week in the general world and in my work life, I don't think this was the soundtrack I wanted from any of the albums.
So what I like about this is that you've had a shit week, but you refuse to blame the music for it, which I think is probably a mature way of facing up to it. Well, is this your therapy week? Do we want to ask what happened?
No, we definitely don't want to do that. Well, I don't know. Look, okay, let's start with the Public Enemy. Let's start with the Joker album, because
Public Enemy in Partial Effect. They can't quite be in full effect at this advanced age.
It sort of was, if they'd done a live album at a huge festival where people recorded it on their phones and then it was remixed by 13-year-olds, it would probably come out something like this, I think. Every album we get like this makes me appreciate that those two Prodigy albums even more. The fact that they could bring it that late into their career, but with they weren't trying to ape their young person energy. They were just bringing energy as, you know, mid 40-year-old people, but still making really good music. Whereas this sort of sounds just tired to me.
Chuck's 60 years old, dude.
Oh, really? Okay. maybe this is just my ageism then.
Yeah. I think it might be.
Yeah.
I think it just might be. I mean, this is a relentlessly old head album, and it's a relentlessly old head sounding album. I mean, a lot of the tracks feel like 80s mixtape stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you got George Clinton, and you've got fucking Cypress Hill, and you've got the Beastie Boys, and you've got Run DMC. You've got all those guys, and you've got sound the track in particular that the Beasties and Run DMC are on, well, the remaining Beasties and the remaining members of Run DMC, but it feels like an 80s mixtape. It's got that very kind of 1985 energy to it. There are references, but the energy itself is also old man. There's a lot of shots, but I feel like it's, they're tired and angry because they were literally singing the same shit in 1989. I mean, some of the Public Enemy number one and Fight the Power are basically remakes of songs that they did back in the 80s, and nothing has fucking changed. In fact, the world has gotten worse. So you tell me if you would sound tired if you were 60 years old and you are still fucking having to bang on the same points you did when you're in your late 20s.
Yeah, so Fat Freddy's drop are releasing like a whole heap of re-recorded songs of theirs that, you know, older songs that they did in ISO, and the first one they did was Hope, which was the first ever song I saw live. It's the first ever Fat Freddy song ever thing, and like, I always find the song itself quite hopeful, you know, hope for a generation, except that it's a 20-year-old song and it's just as it's as resonant now as it was then, and the whole idea of that song was in 20 years things should be better, and they're not. So it's a little bit depressing when you think of it that way.
I'll go back to something that Chuck D once said to me. So this is a bit like you going on about your fucking coaching career. I can talk about
when you were sitting on the beach in South Island kicking back and having beers.
I was not. There are no beaches on South Island to kick back. Chuck was going on about, I think he was going on about baseball. And he was firing off opinions about how, you know, the analytics of real baseball and all the shift and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, none of this was as good as, you know, Hank Aaron and whatever else. And I tweeted Chuck, and I said, Chuck, you're sounding like such an old man right now. And he turned back and said, I'm 55 years old. What the F do you expect me to sound like? And that's exactly how I feel about this album. It's it's just angry old man energy. And as an angry old man, I respect and endorse that single. And there are some tracks on here I really like. I do like the 80s mixtape feel of the way songs kind of run together and bits of them kind of fit into the next song, and there's like excerpts of loops and stuff, and I like that because it feels very golden era hip hop. I like the first two tracks. I like the way they run together. That George Clinton bit into Grid, and I like the if you can't join them, you know you got to beat them section, which is like three tracks running back to back with the track in the middle that has Ice-T basically ripping the whole joint up. So there's some stuff on here I really like. Some of the old man shouting at cloud stuff is, you know, a bit singing about the state of modern hip hop is, and with production that feels like Rick Rubin 1986 doing kind of rejected Beastie Boy tracks, that was kind of a ridiculous electric guitar over the top. But I feel like that's a conscious choice. That's not they wanted this to feel like
they're definitely going for this.
Like it ran in there kind of Def, because as I said last week, this is the first album on Def Jam for like 98, and it does kind of feel like it fits in that late 80s Def Jam run. I noticed they've also released a best of, which is just from those late 80s Def Jam albums, that kind of Fight the Power era.
They're deliberately trying to make not a Kanye or a Jay-Z or a, you know, they're not trying to be a modern hip-hop group here. They're trying to be themselves in their pomp and circumstance.
I mean, like the man said, what the fuck else am I supposed to be?
So, I wouldn't want them to be Kanye. Like, shit.
It was nice to hear Flavor back too, because Flav was missing from their last recording. Where he was allegedly fired from the band, although that apparently was a that's been waved off as a April Fool's Day prank.
It's been retconned.
It's been retconned as an April Fool's Day prank. I feel like it might have been
a little bit more serious than that.
There might have been a bit more to it than that.
This, like, you know, I say all these things, and it was still my favorite album of the three of the week. So, yeah, I just was not in the headspace for the Deftones at all.
The Deftones. Pioneers of new metal with an U, with a U, not with an EW.
Hmm.
And being known as the pioneers of new metal in 2020 is something you don't want on your CV. You know, it's like being, you know, pioneer of eugenics, or guy who had the idea of putting Donald Trump on The Apprentice, or stuff like that.
Hmm.
What I'm trying to say is new metal was bad. It was just no good at all.
And and this isn't particularly good at all.
Well,
again,
it's a good example in a bad genre, I feel like. I mean, this,
yeah.
if you compare it to what, I mean, I wasn't a big Deftones fan in period, as we said last week, and that was partly because their fans are as punishing as the music was. But I realised how little I'd listened to the Deftones, because I went back and listened to some of their more, their biggest hits, if you want a better word. And I realised about all I remembered was the riff from My Own Summer, brackets, shove it, close brackets, from 97. So they had that 97 album with the sweaty Festival Girl and the White Pony album from 2000. But I mean, the problem with new metal is they sort of generally rejected the kind of private school teenager angry at his stepdad kind of energy of the whole concept. This feels simultaneously heavier but more melodic at the same time as some of their sort of late 90s, early aughts pomp.
So I thought I knew these guys much better, and I went back, I did the same thing, I just went back and, you know, clicked on the artist and listened to their top five tracks, and I'm like, I don't remember any of these.
When I got beyond the first couple of tracks, I was like, I don't think I've... They had me, that, apart from the few tracks that ended up on Triple J Hottest 100s, I realised how little, I mean, compared to, say, Tool, who were much more prevalent, I felt like, I'd heard a lot more of this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say this about this album. It's better than the Tool comeback, because the Tool comeback album is fucking awful.
Yeah.
This album did make me think about the debt that new metal owes to Helmet and the Smashing Pumpkins in particular. There was quite a lot of helmet style discordant dirges and sort of pumpkin style soft whimpering vocal with a, you know, a towering pile of riffage behind it.
Yeah.
It sort of made me, because those, you know, they were much earlier in the 90s when they were kind of doing that sort of stuff. So they were kind of at the advent of this.
Yeah, to take out particular... the string and put in more double kick drum and away you go.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I feel like, the thing is, this isn't really a comeback album. Because they've never really stopped recording. I mean, they've had an album out in 2016 that we could have done for the pod. So they've just kept going. I suppose this is the worst kind of legacy act for content. It's not bad enough to just Tomahawk dunk on. Well, it's not so brilliant. I guess... It actually redefines anything they've done. So it kind of just fits. It's just sort of a generic continuation with sort of diminishing returns.
Well, I guess that they must have that. Like, I would imagine that there is. So I was at the gym on Friday, and for some reason the guy running it at 4:30 in the morning put on this sort of music, like back to back to back, and 99% of the people are like, you've got to be fucking kidding, it's 4:30 in the morning, I don't want to feel like someone's trying to slit my throat and scream into my ear at the same time. And then there was one person that was just like, this is fucking awesome, more of this. And it's just like, you're the person that will just listen to every Deftones album as long as the sound stays, you know, within a standard deviation either side of what the last one sounds like, they're going to be happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, new metal also led to kind of emo and hardcore and stuff like that as well. I mean, hardcore had existed for a long time, but that kind of resurgence of hardcore with that kind of very kind of emo, screamo kind of feel to it. Yeah. I feel like with that audience, and I always conflate a lot of those bands together. Like, I think in the period, I probably couldn't have told you the difference between the Deftones and the fucking Tea Party. It just all kind of felt like the same kind of thing. But I had another point. I forgot what it was.
Okay, so Ace Swayze, right?
Ace Swayze and the Ghosts, young Taswegian agit punk band, I suppose. They've got all that kind of early 80s sound and energy. They love a bit of a social commentary, sort of staccato, jangly, but probably more melodic than, say, a band like Idols from the UK, if you're trying to think of what the sound sounds like.
This a little bit, was it West the Barton that sounded a bit like this?
No, West the Barton were more kind of Albert Production 70s pub rock. Right?
Yeah, there's someone else we've done that's a bit like this, and I can't.
There's been plenty of bands. I mean, this is not an uncommon sound kind of Melbourne, and I'm going to count Hobart as kind of South Melbourne,
suburb of Melbourne.
It's very South Melbourne. No, they sound like they are a band that would be you could find in Melbourne any, you know, lots of days. And we've listened to a lot of these sorts of bands, and I think that's probably how they end up in the playlist is because they sound like other bands. I mean, they have been getting a bit of bump. I was just saying that last week they were on Double J, were giving a bit of bump and things like that.
I think the reason...
Would you hated them? Tell us why.
We'll just go straight for the hashtag
content. You hated this band. Explain to me why.
They sound to me like a band that has got their following and their reputation from their live shows, but can't translate it into their albums. There just seems to be an energy missing from this that they're obviously going for. It sounds like they're going for that live energy, but it just doesn't. It's just something that just doesn't mesh for me.
And I don't wholly agree.
Okay.
But that might be because I'm taking their slightly reedy 80s sound as a reduction choice, not a limitation.
No, I guess so.
And one thing it did strike me is that at points, your man, the lead singer, he kind of felt a little bit Seymour-ish, a little bit Hunters and Collectors-ish.
Mm.
And that very 80s, not much bass, kind of jangly, staccato sound did remind me of a lot of like early 80s Australian bands. Well, even the Divinyls or someone like that.
Seymour's a great one for his voice doesn't necessarily sound great through production, but sounds awesome live. Actually sounds rawer and more emotional, and you can sort of feel the songs through more live. But when you have a producer sort of strip some of that out of it, it takes a bit out.
Well, I feel like that was by the limitation of the production of the time. I feel like that was, you know, with Hunters and Collectors, they couldn't actually capture it the way they wanted to.
And probably this feels a bad match of producer too. I think there was a certain...
This feels like more like this is a bunch of conscious decisions because this is what they want to sound like.
Yeah.
Yep. And there's a lot of Australian bands who do that at the moment. I mean, you're going to find very few Australian bands who don't sound like they fit in a different era from the era that they're in right now.
Mm.
Whether that's a, you know, like a Chats or a, the Smith Street Band don't sound like they are around right now. Every band that we've reviewed this year from Australia does not sound like it. I mean, Christ knows what 2020 actually sounds like, because everybody sounds like they're from 1983 or from 1978 or from, you know, 1994 or something.
Yeah.
Maybe music is over. Maybe eras are over.
It's just, well, that this might be, this might necessarily be a product of the Spotify occasion of music, in that every subgenre can exist and be successful. You don't have to be part of the dominant sound, because
there is no dominant sound.
There is no dominant sound. Yeah.
Music is over. It's been clocked.
Yeah. All right. Well, have you got anything for the boys?
I was in a supermarket this week, and played the B-52's Rome.
Oh, okay.
I annoyed my children by singing along to Kate Pearson's vocal line. And I feel like that would also be good for your children to be annoyed by you singing.
Yeah, after we've unleashed bloody Don't Call Me Dude on the world with my boys wandering around, you reckon you're going to double down?
No, I'm saying that you have to sing in public places with them and embarrass them. Now, your kids might not be old enough to realize that, but believe me, there'll come a time very soon when your boys would rather be under a bus than sharing public space with you. And it's your job as a dad to make sure
that they feel humiliating
them in public on the rig. Roam, if you want to, roam around the world.
Who won the week, you reckon?
Well, I think you deliberately threw it. I think you've deliberately hated everything so that you can win, which is a very cynical attempt. And I see right through it. Given I actually liked all three of these albums to varying extents. I mean, I wouldn't go out and buy the Deftones album. I thought the Public Enemy album was their best album for a few years, including the one that was given away for free and the one that we reviewed previous to that.
Yeah, I think it's better.
A couple of Public
that.
Enemy. Yep. Albums, and I like the Ace Swayze and the Ghost album a lot.
Yeah, I think I would have liked Swayze on a different week. I just didn't have the headspace for it this week. So,
what kind of music did you need this week?
What did I listen to? I listened to a bit of Paul Kelly. I'm just having a look back through what I listened to. I actually went back and listened to that album we did last week, the Troy Kingy album. I listened to that quite a bit this week. That's a really good album, hey. I like that album.
Yes, it is. It's just not the album we're reviewing this week.
No. No. Anyway, so I'm gonna go for a bit of a throwback. It doesn't seem like Ugly Duckling are recording anything together anymore, so I'm going to go with one of the members of Ugly Duckling, which has guest spots by the other members of Ugly Duckling on it, so I don't know what's going on there. It's called Listen by Andy Cooper. That's what I'm going to go for this week.
And that will sound like 2002.
Probably, yeah. Andy Cooper's got a very particular style. I don't think he's going to suddenly sound like Nas. So
I don't even know what Nas sounds like, to be honest. I believe he was on this Public Enemy album. I would not know Nas.
Yeah, you didn't go, oh, there's Nas.
That's the thing, is like one of those names of American hip hop that I've never spent any time fucking listening to, so I've got no idea what he sounds like.
There was
other than the fact that his existence really irritates Jay-Z, because Illmatic apparently is in various contexts better thought of than Reasonable Doubt.
Yeah.
And apparently that's resulted in some blood feud between them.
Right.
Who gives a fucking shit?
I did see that one of our... oh, no, it was an EP. God,
don't do that.
No. There was a Grime album out this week, but I think it was just an EP. So.
Oh, God. Terrible. I'm going to go for the new album by VOCs. They were variously known as the OCs, the OCs, or just OCs. They are a quasi-legendary garage punk outfit from various parts of the world. And their new album was called Protean Threat, I believe.
Wow.
So we'll go for that.
And what about a Joker?
Am I claiming the Joker this week?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, then. I will go for a bit of a legacy throwback. We remember we talked a few weeks ago about the Stooges and, you know, whether they were still together and were still recording. And I mentioned James Williamson, who was the guitarist in the second iteration of the Stooges, who was the guy who went off and worked for Sony, I think it was, and, you know, became a high-ranking executive and then had to throw that back in so he could be part of the Stooges comeback things. So he has got together with Dennis Tech, who was the guitarist and songwriter from Radio Birdman, who was that legendary Australian kind of proto-punk band of the late 70s.
Yeah.
Tech actually was from the States, but he came in the late 60s, or the early 70s, he moved to Sydney to do med at New South Wales Uni.
As a lot of those punk guys, he also
brought a really big, you know, because he was from Detroit, where the MC5 and the Stooges were from. So he was very much into that music, and he sort of started his own band in Australia with that kind of sound in mind. And that was Radio Birdman, of course, who along with the Saints, you know, spearheaded that sound in Australia. So these days, Dennis Tech, having retired from being an ER doctor in Michigan, lives in Hawaii, as does James Williamson. They live down the road from each other. So they've gone together and they've done an album together. So you've got the Stooges and the Radio Birdman engine rooms combining to do this new album, which is called 2-1 or 2-for-1 or something like that.
I'm assuming that Staffo is like mainlining this into his veins as we speak. Yeah.
It's entirely possible. Although Radio Birdman weren't from Brisbane, so maybe that doesn't count.
Yeah.
If it was the Saints, it might be a second thing.
He does like that sound, though.
Yeah. So that's going to sound like 1978 at the Oxford Tavern in Petersham. And OCs could sound like fucking anything. It could sound like the Bobby Lees. It could sound like the White Stripes. It could sound like a car accident. I have no idea.
I am having fun telling all my music, you know, any of my friends that like music. So have you listened to the new album by the Bobby Lees? They're just, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I'm sorry, and mate. Like, that's the only way you can say their name.
It's all caps. It's the law.
It's how it's written.
Sorry. It's the law. And they say, is this another fucking Little Sims thing? Did you
become
a random piece of music that's too obscure for anyone else to be aware of?
The one before that was Alien Weaponry. So, yeah, I'm not exactly known for the mainstream, though.
And before that, probably it was Black Mountain's first album.
Yeah, I feel like that one's a little bit more of a mainstream sound than Little Sims and Alien Weaponry, though.
Well, they're probably more well-known.
Mm.
It was their fourth album.
Yeah.
But basically, I don't have any enthusiasm about anything at all, so I'm never going to be going around badgering people, you know, like an evangelical Christian, because there's nothing in the world that's worth being excited about.
No, not right now, anyway. All right.
And on that note...
Geez, we really just bring the heat towards the end of these podcasts these days, don't we?
It's this fucking knife party IPA. It's 7%. Eventually just wears you out.
Just grinds you into the dust. Yeah. All right, Doc. I'll catch you later.
Cheers, man.
In her eyes, a distant firelight burns bright, wondering why.
Oh dear. Yeah, I've got nothing.
I've got nothing is probably about it, yeah.
Not much else.
I've got hay fever. That's what's been fucking me off.
We've been watching Vanessa and I've been watching Top Chef. You ever seen Top Chef? It's like
Top Gear but with chefs.
It's like it's funny because
that's only the one where it's the competitive and they have to figure it out. They've got like a set number of ingredients and there's a secret ingredient. Is that Top Chef?
No, Top Chef
more of a reality show. I'm thinking of the other one, aren't I?
Think Master Chef, but without all the emotional interludes. Like they just cook.
So without the cutaway interviews and the shit.
Yeah, about, no, you know, no, no. My family is dying, and my mum's got cancer, so I'm doing it first. Yes. So, no. There's two parts. There's a quick fire challenge and the main challenge. So, and they're all chefs. There's no cooks or like people.
No
that
fucking
are
hobbyists about. From home.
No, no they're
fucking.
They're all,
casuals.
They're all fucking good. They're all either executive chefs or sous chefs. Like, they're all good.
Do executive chefs have to wear a tie to work?
I have no idea.
I turn up in a Commodore executive from 1987.
So, I made fish and chips tonight, right? And
You're not an executive chef.
I am not an executive chef. But I've really fallen in love with making my own tartare sauce. Like, you know, chop up some parsley and some pickles.
It sounds like a private school thing.
It does, doesn't it? But anyway, so because I'm cooking it in batches, I cook Vanessa's batch first and then put it on the plate for her. And I say, how's that tartare sauce? Because I put in a bit of pickled jalapeno on that one. What did you think? She goes, oh, it's really good. Very nicely balanced. You know, there's some acid in here and it's seasoned beautifully. And I'm like, somebody's been watching too much Top Chef.
There is no camera on you right now.
It's like, this isn't the fucking judging table, lady. Anyway.
It's fine, you fucking show off cunt. Give us some tomato. The best part is if she gets all that and just gets a huge bottle of tomato sauce and goes.
Do you know what the only thing that's irritated me more than fucking Lakers exceptionalism this week is bloody Radiohead exceptionalism. My God, they're not the best band in fucking history. I like them. They're okay. But Jesus Christ.
Why is everyone getting excited? Oh, and the worst part is, isn't it because Kid A has got a big anniversary?
Yeah.
Kid A. I mean, I understand why people get excited about OK Computer. I really don't like that album. I've explained why when we did the podcast. I really, really like the bends. I really don't like OK Computer. Kid A, fucking awful album. I mean, really, no good. So people who, it's like the sort of people who listen to Kid A are the sort of people who performatively need to be seen to be listening to Kid A. That's the thing that really annoys me. It's not whether Kid A is a good album or not. It's that being seen to like Kid A, these people assume to mean something about them as a person.
But Kid A is a bad version of Zeropa. Do you know what I mean? Like, Zeropa is like
deliberately experimental fuck up.
But we're still going to make a listenable fucking album. And Kid A is the bad version of that. It's like, we're going to try something different and it's going to be punishing and you're going to like it because you like us. But it's not actually going to be good.
It's actually going to be a fucking purity test for our fans to see whether you'll stick with us when we put you through this shit. It's like the joyless version of a Muse album.
Yeah.
You know, a Muse album that'll just try everything and just chuck it at the wall. But it's clearly fueled by neon and cocaine, whereas Radiohead, it seems to be fueled by, you know, a strong wish to slit your wrists.
I actually think the one after Kid A is a bit better because it's like they worked out what they were trying to do with that sound and they made a more coherent album. I still don't like the sound. I don't like that where they went with it.
But you can respect
I think it works better.
Achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're just a fucking band. They're just a musical act.
A less fun Muse. That's I'm going to use that.
That's pretty much it. I mean, Muse took all the fun parts of Radiohead and added a lot of cocaine and went fucking mad. That was if Radiohead mind melded with the darkness, you'd end up with Muse. And that's what I like. That's the thing you like about Muse.
Mm. All right. Cool. I'll catch you later.
Stop. I'm going to press this off button.